The following program is pre-recorded.
Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. In less than 2 months, voters across the country will head to the polls to cast their ballots in the November presidential election. In north central Wisconsin, dozens of seats in the state legislature are also on the ballot, with candidates who want to represent you in Madison. State senators will spend the next 4 years in office, while state assembly representatives serve 2-year terms, and they are all involved in critical decision-making that can have an impact on residents for years to come. The candidates who emerge as winners this November will have a say in the taxes you pay, the healthcare options presented to you, how our schools are funded, and much more. They make decisions on infrastructure, help regulate our businesses, and vote on policies that shape our everyday lives. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. As part of our mission to offer balanced election coverage, we invited candidates for key races in north central Wisconsin to spend some time with us, answering 7 identical questions about their background, their ideas, and their top priorities in representing your interests in Madison. This week is the 3rd in our series of candidate conversations, all of which aim to help you make an informed choice this November when heading to the polls. Previously, we talked with candidates for the state's 14th and 24th Senate districts, as well as candidates seeking to represent Wisconsin's 71st and 85th districts. Earlier interviews in the series, along with a discussion on recent polling in the state, can be heard at wpr.org/route51. Today, we welcome a new set of candidates to the program, with additional conversations planned in the coming weeks. Because each interview was recorded earlier, we won't be taking your calls or emails today. First, we'll hear from the candidates for Wisconsin's 12th Senate District, starting with Republican Mary Felskowski, along with Democrat Edward Boeke. Then we'll take a look at the race for Wisconsin's 69th Assembly District with Brian Giles, a Democrat, and Donna Roser, a Republican seeking the seat. Joining us now on Route 51 is Mary Felskowski from Tomahawk, the Republican candidate for Wisconsin's 12th Senate District. Republican Tom Tiffany held the seat until his election in the U.S. Congress. Ms. Felskowski will face off against Democrat Ed Boeke. Thanks so much for being here today. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Well, let's start off by learning a little bit about you. So tell us about yourself. What's your background and why are you running for this specific office?
So I was actually born and raised in the Northwoods. I lived here my whole life. I went off to college at UW-River Falls for 4 years, where I majored in finance and economics, a minor in animal science, and then I came back to the Tomahawk area and purchased a family business. So I've owned and operated CIS Insurance Group for the last 35 years. I've lived here, raised a family here. Why did I run for office? What I saw happening in our state prior to 2012 was a lot of things that we had lost opportunity for our young people. You know, when I graduated and bought my business, I was 24 years old, and I was in a position to be able to do that. And things have gotten much harder for business owners and for entrepreneurs in the state. So what I wanted to do was be a voice for the Northwoods to bring back those types of opportunities, whether it's educational opportunities, healthcare-related opportunities, job opportunities, and just make northern Wisconsin a very attractive place to come and work, live, and play with your families.
Well, COVID-19 and the government's response to it are at the top of everyone's mind these days. How do you feel about the job the legislature and the governor have done so far? And what changes, if any, would you like to see to the state's COVID-19 response?
So I think that, COVID-19 is a learning curve. And the original order, you know, with the shutdown, I think we could have done more surgical approach to it. And when I say that, we had hotspots around the states. Those areas where there was hotspots, I very much agree with shutting things down and getting them contained, you know, looking over the situation and then opening back up. But I think we did a one-size-fits-all approach, which I very much disagree with. Shutting down the entire state has cost us greatly for our small businesses. And we've kind of pushed people into the big box stores and online retail while hurting our mom and pops greatly. And when you have you know, less than a 2% infection rate in some parts of the state where we see much higher infection rates in other parts of the state, I think we could have done a little bit better job of just going to those high infection areas and not treating everyone the same.
The pandemic has resulted in unprecedented economic challenges. You referred to that just a moment ago, but lost revenue will have a significant impact on the state's budget. The latest projections show the revenue shortfall could have some pretty serious implications on state aid for schools and infrastructure, for example. So how do you propose to deal with the projected state budget shortfall if this is really what's going to happen?
So I think that's something that, you know, it's going to be where we're going to just have to look at everything, see where those shortfalls are and what amount that we're going to have to. And then we're going to have to tighten our belts and we're going to have to tighten our belts across the board. You know, one of the things is that there's certain federal rules when it comes to our state budget where we certain things take precedence in funding over others, where we're forced to fund in order to get the federal match. Those will be in place. And then it's looking at needs and wants. You know, we're going to have to fund the needs of the state and maybe put some of the wants on hold, just like every other small business is going to have to do and all families are going to have to do when there's an economic shortfall.
Expanding on that just a little bit, you talk about, you know, tightening the budget and tightening our belt. Do you see any opportunities to increase revenue? So perhaps amplify the revenues that the state is receiving right now and in a different way?
So the one thing that, you know, people have asked that question a lot, but we are still one of the highest tax states. We're in the top 10 highest tax states when you take into consideration property taxes, income tax, corporate taxes, you know, sales tax across the board. And I think it would be very hard at this time to increase taxes on people that are already hurting, whether those are our small business owners, whether those are our larger businesses. We need to get people back to work. And we need to continue that business expansion so that the jobs are continuing so that that revenue will then will return. So I would not be in favor of raising taxes, not when our economy and our businesses are hurting the way they are.
You yourself were a business owner. Small businesses and farmers have been especially hard hit by the pandemic and the economic downturn. So how do you see the state as best helping those struggling to recover in small businesses and the agricultural sector?
So the agricultural sector, a lot of that is happening already on the federal level with the, you know, with the new trade agreements. I'm seeing where farmers and others are having some good revenues coming in. The prices are stabilizing. So with the deregulation and improving trade requirements at the federal level has been extremely helpful. When it comes to our small business climate, basically it's let them open. Let them get back to doing business as normal. I think prior to this last mandate by the governors, I think our businesses were doing a very good job of mitigating, you know, do the social distancing and taking things in their own hands, working with their employees. So it was already happening, but we just can't shut them down again because that will not work for anyone.
Specifically, farmers have had a very difficult time. We've heard about record bankruptcies by folks in this group. And is there anything you think the state can do to help farmers specifically, aside from what's happening on the federal level?
I think there's always educational processes that happen. And I think that comes through, you know, working with the local banks, working with others on the best practices for farming. And I do think that the state can always be involved in that. You know, how do I do better management of my herd, my financials, just constantly putting out their information and educational opportunities for farmers to do best practices across the board.
Let's talk a little bit about priorities. What do you see as your top two priorities in representing the district in Madison?
The number one priority is reminding Madison that Northern Wisconsin exists and that we have needs and we have challenges just like other parts of the state. You know, people think of poverty and they think of the inner city. People think of lack of health care and they think of the inner city. My job is to remind them that we have those same challenges in northern and rural communities. So that is always going to be a priority, is to take the needs of my district down to Madison and make sure that we don't get lost in the shuffle. And that road funding, school funding, health care funding, and economic growth. So that's number one for me. And then around other things is what can we do as a state around healthcare issues and job issues so that we can provide health care to our seniors, our children, and everything at the state level. And we do have a lack of resources in the northern part of the state and in the inner cities, and make sure that those resources are there for health care. Because without health care, it's hard to have good employees. It's hard to have prosperity and other things. So that's number one. That would be the second priority that I have. And then helping employers develop a workforce. And that's when education and other things all come into play so that we have the resources in the North to grow and prosper.
In 2016, the rural areas of Wisconsin voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. In the same election, medium to large metropolitan areas went decisively the other way. So how do you propose to address the concerns of voters in both areas without disenfranchising either one?
So I think the concerns are the same. You know, the concerns in our state are around good schools for my children. Can I provide for my family? Are there good paying jobs in my area? Do we have clean water? Do we have environments that are healthy for people to get out and work and play? So the concerns are the same. And I think it's just moving our state forward in a bipartisan effort. And people get lost in the fact that we're not bipartisan. We are. Actually, 95% of the bills that pass through the state assembly are bipartisan bills. So there's a lot of things that we can work on cohesively, whether that's getting access to mental health care, getting access to good health care, oral health care, you know, providing a business climate so that businesses can grow and flourish and provide good jobs. I don't think that that's really a Trump versus non-Trump issue. That's just a state issue that a lot of us can all come together and work on.
In our final 2 minutes, I wanted to give you an opportunity to bring up anything that we haven't talked about already, something you'd like to discuss that your campaign is focusing on, or something you'd like voters to know about you.
So I think the biggest thing that I would like voters to know is that I will work diligently for them. You know, being in the 35th Assembly District, I've done 2 terms on joint finance, and I've also, this current term, I've been the Assistant Majority Leader. So I've gotten to see the real inner workings of government, and I've gotten the knowledge on how to work within the whole, you know, system with my colleagues, and work with the executive branch in order to make sure that Wisconsin has the resources it needs to prosper, especially in our rural districts. Healthcare is always going to be a challenge. I've worked extensively on healthcare issues and will continue to do so legislatively in the upcoming session, affordability and access. In addition to that, when it comes to a regulatory climate, we need to find the balance between a regulatory climate that protects people as well as allowing businesses to grow and flourish. And that is really what we're going to concentrate on. And I just feel that with the years that I've had in the assembly, that I've got the knowledge to really hit the ground running and getting that done on a state in the Senate.
You're listening to special election coverage with Mary Felskowski, the Republican candidate for Wisconsin's 12th Senate District. Republican Tom Tiffany held the seat until his election to the U.S. Congress. Ms. Felskowski will face off against Democrat Ed Vokey in the election. Thank you so much for being here today. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we'll hear from Democrat Edward Vokey as our special election coverage continues. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us now on Route 51 is Ed Vokey of Minocqua, a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 12th Senate District. Republican Tom Tiffany held the seat until his election to the U.S. Congress. Mr. Vokey is facing off against Republican Mary Felskowski. Thank you for joining us today, Mr. Vokey.
Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, let's start by having you tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from and what's your background and why are you running for office?
Absolutely. I live up in Minocqua, Wisconsin. I own a 100-acre homestead with my family up here, and we're a very food-centric family. My wife is a nutritional therapist, and I was in the hospitality industry for a good portion of my adolescent and adult life. I've worked at many different places throughout the state of Wisconsin, opening up restaurants, and some fairly successful ones at that. So over the course of the last 5 years, we decided to have a family. And having a horse in the race, so to speak, with my son now, I want to leave northern Wisconsin better than I found it. And I've sat here for the last number of years with ecological matters going on in the area, or the tourist industry in this area suffering a little bit over the course of the COVID pandemic, and decided to take a stand for the people of northern Wisconsin to make a more sustainable and economically viable future.
COVID-19, you brought that up, and of course, that is at the top of everyone's mind. So how do you feel about the job the legislature and the governor have done so far? And what changes, if any, would you like to see to the state's COVID-19 response?
I believe the initial response was absolutely on point in regard to the stay-at-home order. I thought we did an excellent job to begin with at flattening the curve. I was more than discouraged when that was struck down by the state Supreme Court, and feel that the underlying the modus operandi of the state of Wisconsin is to take care of people's health and to make sure that they have what they need. And in a health crisis, to, you know, local control is incredibly important. And for the local municipalities to have picked up the pieces of where the state government left off, so to say, I was very heartened to see public health departments in the localities in the 12th district doing what it takes in order to flatten the curve more. The initial response was fantastic, and obviously cases spiked as time went on. I have serious concerns about what schools look like in the coming weeks, and I hope that we can all come together as a collective community in order to do what's best for everyone and not just ourselves individually.
There are plenty of health challenges, but the pandemic has resulted in unprecedented economic challenges as well. Lost revenue will have a significant impact on the state's budget. The latest projections show the revenue shortfall could have serious implications on state aid for schools and for infrastructure, for example. So if elected, how do you propose to deal with those state budget shortfalls that are being projected?
Absolutely. I don't believe that austerity measures are the way forward. I believe that with thoughtfulness, any issue could be tackled in 2021 if elected to office as a state senator. Wisconsin has bountiful resources. We have a fantastic workforce, and it's a matter of configuring our assets in a way that's going to work for us through this pandemic. And we need to have a little more flexibility when it comes to how we respond as a state to this situation, because we are going to, in earnest, be facing these shortfalls. And we need to come up with solutions in the immediate that are going to, you know, put people to work. I would love to see an employment industry instead of an unemployment office, for example. We saw a lot of backups when it came to people even collecting unemployment because of the red tape that's been created over the course of the last 10 years. There's a lot that can be done in the legislature in order to put Wisconsin residents and businesses in a place where they can thrive through this pandemic.
Do you see any specific programs or opportunities for the state to either boost the revenue that's available or cut costs? What do you think could happen?
Well, I would love for the state government to be able to backstop our small businesses in particular. I think that the middle class is key to a functioning economy here in Wisconsin. And I see projections of over 40% of businesses that may not make it through the pandemic. So to reconfigure assets in order to create a backstop for those small businesses, those small farmers, our tourist industry here in northern Wisconsin, through programs that are run through the WEDC, for example, there are already small business initiatives that are in place that we could utilize our resources in order to make sure that the people that rely on the state government get what they need through this time.
And you mentioned small businesses and farmers. They've been especially hard hit by the pandemic and the economic downturn. We've seen a record number of bankruptcies by farmers in our area. So how can the state specifically best help the farmers and small businesses struggling to recover? What do you see as the answer?
Well, I see a hyper-localization to the solution for small family farmers. And as a citizen in 2019, I went to Madison in order to lobby the very type of politicians that I'm attempting to become in the state legislature in regards to a bill called the Rural Revival Act that was an attempt for farmers to be able to have a farm store where they sell products directly to consumers. And with the tariffs that have happened under the Trump administration, there's a lot of dairy farmers, for example, in Wisconsin, who relied on the export of their milk to Canada, and that was cut off when NAFTA was ripped up, for example. So people tried to stave off the shortfall in sales by putting it into cheese. And as you said, small family farms are going bankrupt. And this is a result of policy choices. And the farmers are not at fault. They are not working less hard. They're doing all that they can. And I believe it's the function of the state of Wisconsin, again, to create the opportunity through legislation to give them the ability to localize their sales in order to not only provide for their community, but keep local money in local dollar pools. I think that would be an excellent way to not only strengthen community, but make sure people are eating healthier and that farmers have money in their pockets.
Let's talk a little bit about priorities. What are your top two priorities in representing the district in Madison?
Absolutely. First and foremost is the expansion of rural broadband. Rural broadband would underpin any industry that we can create in the years to come in northern Wisconsin. We are more connected than ever, and people having access, particularly in COVID-19, to their work remotely is incredibly important. And there are some areas in this district where, for example, when COVID came down to begin with, nearly 50% of students in some districts did not any longer have access to their classes. Now, in 2020, that should not be happening. So expanding rural broadband internet in this area with, you know, 90% coverage in the next couple of years is absolutely imperative to making sure that our industries are able to thrive that are here and can be expanded so that there's more opportunities for people. My second big piece is fair maps. It's nonpartisan redistricting. It's something that both Democrats and Republicans agree en masse. It's been voted on in referendum in, I believe, 52 of Wisconsin's counties already in approval. People need fair representation, and the maps that are currently in place are biased towards Republicans taking the seats. In the last election cycle, Democrats at large won 54% of the vote, and that got them 36% of the seats. We need a nonpartisan commission put in place that takes the hands of the legislature off of the drawing of district maps, because we should not, as legislators, be choosing our constituents. Our constituents should be choosing us.
We have about 2 minutes left, and we have two questions left. One is, in 2016, the rural areas of Wisconsin voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. In the same election, medium to large metropolitan areas went decisively the other way. So how do you propose to address the concerns of voters in both areas without disenfranchising either one?
I believe that it's all the same ball of wax, and that we should each have a perspective that we do live very different lives depending on if we're in a municipal or in a rural area. I don't believe that our interests are mutually exclusive. I believe that we can bridge the gap between the urban and rural areas. And I think that there is the infrastructural necessity to create industry in rural areas, particularly that are green in the years to come, because 90% of green energy is created outside of city centers. And the city centers are where our energy corporations are, for example. So partnerships between government and private entities in order to create a tapestry in the state of Wisconsin that works for all of us.
And one final question for you. Is there anything that we haven't brought up that you'd like to discuss that your campaign is focusing on? Or what do you want voters to know about you?
Well, I would love for one of our top budgetary priorities to be our public schools in the state of Wisconsin, particularly during pandemic. And as you said earlier, austerity measures are not going to be able to fix the budgetary crisis that we are facing, but we need to prioritize public school funding for our children's future to make sure that Wisconsin is viable for the decades to come. And it starts with our children. And it is absolutely imperative that we give teachers and students a safe place to learn and the resources to do it in an unprecedented time. And for me, that is the greatest change that I could create becoming state senator.
Thank you. You're listening to special election coverage with Ed Vokey, Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 12th Senate District. Republican Tom Tiffany held the seat until his election to the U.S. Congress. Mr. Vokey is facing off against Republican Mary Felskowski. Thank you so much for joining us today. Very much appreciate it.
It was wonderful to be with you. Thank you.
Coming up next, we'll hear from candidates in the race for Wisconsin's 69th Assembly District, Democrat Brian Giles and Republican Donna Roser, part of our special election coverage. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from All of Us Wisconsin, dedicated to helping speed up health research breakthroughs by asking 1 million people to share health information. Details at joinallofus.org/Wisconsin.
PBS Wisconsin is proud to offer Bright by Text, a free texting service for parents and caregivers of children ages 8 and younger. Text the word BADGER to 274-448 and receive research-based, age-specific resources and activities from trusted content partners like PBS Kids. Get free educational resources delivered to your phone with Bright by Text from PBS Wisconsin. Just text BADGER to 274-448.
Joining us now on Route 51 is Brian Giles, Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 69th Assembly District. Donna Roser, a Republican, is also on the ticket for the seat, which is currently held by Republican Representative Bob Culp, who is not seeking re-election. Mr. Giles, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me this morning.
I'd like to start out by just asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your background and why are you running?
Sure. Well, I'm a lifelong resident of the district here. I've worked here most of my life. I've volunteered coaching my kids. We've raised our family here. I've volunteered with the local Democratic Party for a number of years, number of elections. First time running. And actually, if you would have asked me, a year ago if I planned on running, I would have said, never. Comfortable working for elections, but not actually running. But people started, kind of letting me know that the seat was of a vacant seat, and that no one was stepping up to run. And it's always, a matter of you can't win if you don't have someone running. I think the thing that really, though, that made me really jump in the race was what happened on April 7th with the elections, with, people having to put their lives in basically at risk just to vote. That was kind of the push over the edge thing for me.
Well, speaking of COVID-19, the government's response to it, of course, that's at the top of everyone's mind right now. So how do you feel about the job the legislature and the governor have done so far? And what changes, if any, would you like to see to the state's COVID-19 response?
I wish that the legislature and the governor could have worked closer together. Rescinding the stay-at-home order, which really seemed to be helping, threw us back in the mix. I mean, our area hasn't been hit as bad as some other areas, but nonetheless, people travel and you're always at risk for spreading it. So I wish, that our government would have worked a little closer together just to try to get a really hold on this from the beginning. I am all for the mask mandate. I think, doctors have said over and over, and it's proven fact that, if everyone wears a mask, it's going to cut the likelihood of a spread of the coronavirus, and it's going to get us back on track quicker, both health-wise and economically.
So would you like to see a nationwide mask mandate?
For sure. I would love to see a nationwide mask mandate, to be honest, until we really got this under control, because, like I said, no matter what, people are traveling and there's always the risk of spreading, even if you're in an area that hasn't been hit real hard. It doesn't take much to spread it if people aren't following these, you know, really simple safety guidelines.
Certainly, the pandemic has resulted in economic challenges, unprecedented ones. Lost revenue is going to have a significant impact on the state's budget. The latest projections show the revenue shortfall could have serious implications on state aid for schools and infrastructure, for example. So if elected, how do you propose to deal with the proposed state budget shortfall?
Well, number one, we need to make sure that our schools are funded. I mean, I think, you know, parents who've had to deal with trying to homeschool kids or trying to make sure that, you know, the kids are following the virtual learning have really realized the importance of our schools, of our public education and our teachers. So first and foremost, we need to make sure that money is allocated in the budget to be able to really handle the economic, you know, challenges that our schools are going to face. Whether we have to move money around in the budget from, you know, other factors. I've talked a lot about looking into the decriminalization of marijuana, which would free up countless costs that, you know, that our state is paying, housing low-level drug offenders. The amount of money that, you know, that we're spending for that is pretty outstanding and can definitely be used to help combat the economic crisis that we're looking at through the coronavirus.
Well, certainly small businesses and farmers have been especially hard hit by the pandemic and the economic downturn. So how do you think the state could best help those struggling to recover? They're still trying to get back on track now.
Well, I think we definitely need a more watchful eye on where that small business money was going. I know there's a lot of issue that it didn't reach small businesses that really needed it most. And you saw, you know, and heard a lot of it going to millionaires. I think we need better oversight to where we are putting this money to the small businesses to make sure the small businesses and the farmers that really needed the money are getting the money, and that we're not supplementing, you know, millionaires and big business.
So if you're elected, what would you say your top two priorities would be in representing your district?
Well, number one, another reason I really looked to run for this seat is we've actually had 5 referendums that have passed overwhelmingly in our district, and none have been brought to vote in Madison. And so number one, I would look to make sure that we get a vote on these bipartisan referendums, which includes expanding health care, which, you know, again, especially in the time of the pandemic, is a huge issue. Obviously hoping to look to lower, you know, drug prescription prices as well, and that raising minimum wage. We're looking at people having to work 2-3 jobs just to get by, and that's not right in the nation that we live in. Legalizing medical marijuana is another thing that passed, you know, overwhelming bipartisan support. There's so many people suffering that could have that suffering alleviated with just a simple matter of legalizing medical marijuana, getting big money out of politics, and fair maps, which I think has been another proven factor. I mean, I look at my district, and it's ridiculous how the map goes. Just here in Marshfield, where I live, people, you know, friends 2 blocks away from me can't vote because the map is that skewed. And so that's one of the reasons I signed the Fair Map Pledge, is because I believe that the map shouldn't benefit either party, especially at the expense of people.
You mentioned marijuana a couple of times, medical marijuana. Would you go so far as to promote legalizing recreational marijuana?
I think first and foremost, my number one task, were I to be elected, would to pass medical. From there, I definitely think that we need to look at the benefits of legalizing recreational marijuana in terms of not only benefit economically. I mean, you look at some of the states that have done it, the economic windfall from the taxation of recreational marijuana, would again alleviate a lot of those economic issues that we're going to be facing, as well. As I talked about, the decriminalization would free up so many people who are in in jails and prisons for low level drug offenses, nonviolent. That could be a real benefit to our society. It would take the business out of the hand of drug dealers, free up police for more resources. Sure. So I think it's definitely something that we would definitely want to take a look at. But okay. Again, number one is the medical aspect, because I think the health and well-being of people should be number one.
I have two more brief questions for you. In 2016, the rural areas of Wisconsin voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. But in that same election, medium to large metropolitan areas went decisively the other way. So how do you propose to address the concerns of voters in both areas without disenfranchising either one?
That is, in the day we're in, that is probably one of the most important questions. I mean, we are literally so divided on so many issues. Again, that's one of the main reasons I want to look first and foremost to address these bipartisan issues. I mean, issues that both, a more rural area where I'm in or a more metropolitan area, I think everyone pretty much agrees on these issues. So I think the easiest way to really bring people together is to address those bipartisan issues first. And then if you show that you're able to work, kind of across the lines and kind of from a rural area to more urban area, really addressing the same issues, then I think some of the other issues to address will be easier.
Sure. And one final question, is there anything we have not brought up to you that you'd like to discuss that your campaign is focusing on?
I just really want to stress that I hope people take seriously the coronavirus, to really work on following these really simple, basic, mandates to really look out for the well-being and health of everyone. And I think that's really where it starts.
Thank you. You're listening to Special Election Coverage with Brian Giles, Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 69th Assembly District. Republican Donna Rosar is also on the ticket for the seat, currently held by Republican Representative Bob Culp, who is not seeking re-election. Mr. Giles, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Coming up next, we'll hear from Republican candidate Donna Rosar as our special election coverage continues. I'm Shereen Seewert. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us now on Route 51 is Donna Rosar, a Republican candidate for Wisconsin's 69th Assembly District. She faces Democrat Brian Giles for the seat, which is currently held by Republican Representative Bob Culp. Representative Culp is not seeking re-election. Ms. Rosar, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to do so.
So tell us about yourself. What's your background and why are you running for office?
Well, I'm a nurse by profession. I have a master's degree from Viterbo University in La Crosse, and I've been teaching nursing students since 2008. I still work casually as a cardiac medical surgical nurse at the Marshfield Medical Center, and so my life has been kind of nursing. I've been on the Wood County Board for 20 years, and I'm running for office because somebody asked me to run for office. I kind of felt like I'd found my niche on the county board, love local government, and when Bob Culp decided that he was not going to seek re-election, I got a call asking me to consider running for the position. Hadn't even given a thought about ever running for state office again. In 2003, I ran for state assembly in the 24th Assembly District, which was a totally different geographic district at that time. And I won a four-way Republican primary at that time and lost in the general election to the Democratic candidate from Stevens Point. So, you know, this individual knew that I had been interested in running for partisan politics before, and so called me up and believed that with my work and life experience and my resume that I was a really good candidate to run for this position. So that's why I ran.
Okay. COVID-19 and the government's response to it are at the top of everyone's mind. So how do you feel about the job the legislature and the governor have done so far? And what changes, if any, would you like to see to the state's COVID-19 response?
Well, I was disappointed in the lockdown. I was glad that the state legislature challenged that and it was overturned. I've also been disappointed about the mandatory mask. I think that people should have a choice whether they wear a mask or not. I will be very interested to see if this has any effect. I have heard anecdotal stories about people becoming infected and everybody in the room at some certain event was masked. I'm kind of disappointed at our overreaction of this. I'm not taking this lightly. I believe that this is a real health threat, but I'm disappointed that the whole process has been politicized and it's almost become a political ball now instead of a common sense, reasonable response to an infectious disease.
The pandemic has resulted in unprecedented economic challenges, too. Lost revenue, that's going to have a significant impact on the state's budget. The latest projections show the revenue shortfall could have serious implications on state aid for schools and infrastructure, for example. If you're elected, how do you propose to deal with that and the state budget shortfall?
It's going to be pretty challenging, isn't it? You know, I'm a county board supervisor, so we've already talked about those challenges at the county level. But as we enter the biennial budget at the state level, there are going to have to be some pretty serious discussions. And I believe that we're going to have to prioritize pretty significantly. I'm not in favor of raising taxes a tremendous amount, and so if at all. And so I believe that we're going to have to truly look at the amount of money we have available and then tighten our belt, prioritize where we believe the money should go, and really work hard to meet basic needs of the state and putting that money where it's going to have the best return on investment. I in no way am downplaying the challenges that we are going to have to face because of the economic devastation that I believe that we have brought about because of this COVID situation.
Small businesses and farmers have been especially hard hit by the pandemic and the economic downturn. So how can the state best help those struggling to recover?
Well, and you know, the 69th Assembly District is a rural district, so that's going to be something that I'm going to particularly be interested in participating in the discussion in. I believe that we need to work hard to make people whole because it wasn't their fault that we had this economic devastation. They were responding to the mandates of the state. And so I believe the state does have a responsibility for helping them stay afloat. How we do that, I believe, goes back to my previous answer where we're going to have to look at prioritizations and doing what we need to do to help people not go under. I just am so upset about the individual and business devastation that has happened because of what we have done. And some of it I don't think was necessary. And so because the state required that people do this, we're going to have to work hard to mobilize the resources that are necessary to keep people afloat.
As you mentioned, the 69th is a very rural area. Farmers, what about farmers, especially hard hit by this? Do you have anything specific that you think should be done to help farmers?
Well, you know, one thing that I've always believed as a candidate is that we need to respond to the district desires. And so if I get elected, I'm going to be pulling people in and asking for suggestions about what they believe needs to be done. Now, one thing that I believe needs to be done is that we need to maintain infrastructure. If people can't move from rural areas to urban areas to work. If farmers can't move their products to market because of poor infrastructure, I think that the state has a responsibility to invest in that infrastructure. So infrastructure development, including bridges and roads and culverts and broadband access, they are all things that I believe is the responsibility of a person that represents a rural district. And so my specific answer to that question would be infrastructure investment. But there probably are other things, and the farmers would know best how to respond to that question. And I intend to listen to them and see what they would like me to do as their representative.
What are your top two priorities in representing the district in Madison?
Well, infrastructure would be one thing. I really believe that state government has a responsibility to invest in infrastructure all over the state. And especially as a rural representative, it's important that I advocate for my district for investment in that rural infrastructure. I don't know if you got the press release, but the Wisconsin Hospital Association just sent out a press release about recognition that Wisconsin's rural hospitals that have received, they've received from the Federal Health Resource and Services Administration in response to the quality improvement that they've been doing in delivering rural health care. That is one of my priorities. I think as a nurse, I understand some of health care delivery. I also understand the workforce that's necessary to deliver that quality health care. So accessible, quality, and as affordable as it can be, rural health care would be one of the other important topics that I would like to participate in.
All right, we have about 1 minute left and two quick questions for you. First, in 2016, the rural areas of Wisconsin voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. In the same election, medium to large metropolitan areas went decisively the other way. How do you propose to address the concerns of voters in both areas without disenfranchising either one?
Well, my purpose will be to represent a rural district, okay? So I will work for the benefit of the whole state if elected, but my representation will be for the 69th Assembly District. My desire is to go to Madison and represent the values of the constituents that live in that district and then work with representatives from other areas of the state for the betterment of our whole state.
All right. And very quickly, is there anything we haven't brought up that you'd like to discuss that your campaign is focusing on?
No, I think you covered the questions, you covered, you know, what I would like to say very well. I just appreciate the opportunity. I do have a website, voteroser.com. I would love for people to go there to learn more about my campaign. I'm also very approachable and accessible, and if people have additional questions, they can contact me directly.
You're listening to special election coverage with Donna Roser, Republican candidate for Wisconsin's 69th Assembly District. She faces Democrat Brian Giles for the seat, which is currently held by Republican Representative Bob Culp. Representative Culp is not seeking re-election. Ms. Roser, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, Republican Mary Felskowski and Democrat Edward Boeke, candidates for Wisconsin's 12th Senate District, and Democrat Brian Giles and Republican Donna Roser, candidates for Wisconsin's 69th Assembly District. Our producer is Joy Ratch-Kramer. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer, who is also our on-air producer today. Special thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program and our previous candidate conversations at WPR.org/Route 51. Next week, we'll hear from candidates in Wisconsin's 35th and 72nd Assembly Districts as we continue our election coverage. We hope you join us. Until then, we're heading out of town.